Welcome to the Hoban Minute, a podcast that will shift your perspective on the business, politics, and culture of the hemp and marijuana industries. I'm your host, Xavier Jaye. It's 420 somewhere, so let's dive in. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Hoban Minute. This is your host, Xavier, and I'm joined today by the world's biggest 76ers fan, Bob Hoban.
Well, it's good to be here. As we sit here in the throes of the end of state legislative sessions, the NBA playoffs, of course, which is fantastic, and an office move, it's good to have some tranquility.
Yes.
And be here with you today.
No, it is. It's good to have a little peace and quiet. And we're fortunate enough to be in our lovely producer's home office that she converted into a podcast recording studio for us. So shout out to Halston for doing that. Really appreciate it. And today we are joined by a special guest, Brian Passman, the head hunter of Hunter Esquire. How you doing today, Brian?
I'm doing well, Xavier. Thanks. I'm glad to be here with you guys.
Yeah, we are very grateful to have you, and we're excited for the conversation. So, you know, jumping right in, let's give the audience a bit of a sense of what a headhunter is. Because when I think of a headhunter, you know, I think of having a belt of shrunken heads around my waist and, you know, a tomahawk, and I'm out there scalping people. You know, I think of a little bit more of a, let's say, a savage time. So what is a headhunter in the context of the cannabis industry and for you, Brian?
Sure. And there is some similarities. I think, if you actually are, a headhunter or recruiter in the traditional sense, you're hunting and you're scalping talent from companies for your clients. So in a headhunter's world, there's only two types of companies. There's your client companies that hire you to get talent, and your source companies that you're pulling talent from. So I was trained as a headhunter in the classical sense. It's really all I know how to do. I came out of school not knowing what I was going to be when I grew up, and fell into it, and fortunately landed with a franchise of Management Recruiters International, which for a long time has been the biggest, most respected, recruitment organization worldwide with offices everywhere. So I went through that training and Dale Carnegie training. So definitely classically trained as a recruiter, which, you know, did happen 23 years ago, pre-LinkedIn and a lot of other things that recruiters nowadays help. So I'm thankful that I did it at that time, because I did have to hunt for talent. It wasn't just post a job on LinkedIn or Indeed or elsewhere and file applicants as they come through. So, you know, I think the new age recruiter is a little bit less of a headhunter and more of a applicant resume filer, if you will.
As an aside, the term headhunter, not in the context of finding a job, but our consulting firm, Gateway Proven Strategies, had a project in northeastern India, and it was a place called Manipur. And the clients were quite pleased to tell us, as we were helping facilitate genetics and planting and development of a project there, that this is the region of India where, very close to where cannabis was originally found, but also it still contains tribes that are headhunters. So it's a different concept, it sounds like.
Less of a classical headhunter, I think.
new age. He's a new age headhunter.
I see. That's great.
Oh, that's good.
No, and I think, you know, your point about technology, I've definitely, that resonates with me right now. As the listeners know, you know, I'm in law school, and I frequently think about all the digital tools that I make use of, you know, Google, to name a big one. And I just can't imagine having been an attorney before the internet and, you know, having to have a library of books and having to actually read through laws in a physical manual, and not be able to just pull them up, you know, with a few clicks. So, it's definitely a different world.
Right now you could just have that. Now you could have that virtual background behind you with all the books and Encyclopedia Britannicas behind you virtually, without actually having to have the big bookcase with all the books.
Exactly. Unfortunately, I hope to never have to experience a move where I have to move a personal law library to another location. So,
Amen.
Well, Brian, I was going to ask you, you know, given where we are in the cannabis industry right now, you know, poor economic times, maybe the poorest in sort of the 10 years of our commercial regulated cannabis industry thus far, there's still growth. It's just not the crazy type of growth we've seen year over year in previous years. But there's also a lot of contraction and companies that are going under. I attribute that a lot to poorly run companies, which begs for people like you to provide services and executives. But I still see on LinkedIn and otherwise people posting they received a job offer for X or for Y or for Z, and people are moving. So it seems to me that there's a lot of movement during poor economic conditions, and in part that maybe defies my sense of logic, perhaps, or just what's intuitive here. Can you talk to us a little bit about the job market right now and what's happening given these uncertain economic times, but certainly poor economic times for the cannabis industry?
Yeah, certainly. And there are a lot of conflicting things at play that would make it seem like a little bit of an enigma or conundrum, such as, you know, unemployment being at this all-time low. And I think the Department of Labor would classify us at zero unemployment, because anything below 4% is, you know, classified as zero unemployment, which is a funny term. But unemployment, we talk about how unemployment is so low, you know, yet every time, you know, you see a role posted somewhere, it's got hundreds and hundreds of applicants. And most of us can attest to, we know bunches of people that are looking for work. So, you know, that's a macro comment. And then, you know, commenting on what's going on in the cannabis industry is certainly it's a difficult time. But, you know, thankfully there are pockets of companies that are doing well. There are, you know, for sure the majority of the businesses in the industry, I would agree, have been very poorly run for a while now. And we'll see this year, next year, you know, extinction event type of occurrences. And I think it's just, you know, part of the natural evolution of an industry shaking out. But plenty of companies are still doing well. Companies have operated responsibly. They've acted in good corporate governance and, you know, focused on keeping balance sheets healthy and doing all of the things that you would hope a business that wanted to survive the trials and tribulations and have runway to be sustained would do. So, you know, thankfully for us, we've tried to just sign up those companies along the way. We are guilty of, you know, working with some cannabis companies that were a little bit less aspirational for, in terms of having eye on the prize long term than we'd like. But, you know, we've learned along with others. So the good news, I'd say for hiring in cannabis is that those that decided some time ago to sign up and attach their careers to the cannabis industry and have moved over from whatever the mainstream industry they may have participated in before is, you know, right about now, there's little desire by cannabis businesses to hire from outside of the cannabis industry. So it's just, it's incredibly incestual. We're hopefully seeing the cream of the crop, those folks that have participated in the right way in the industry, who have operated with integrity and ethically and have delivered real results and, you know, not just failed forward and been acknowledged, you know, for other things other than really executing and building and leading and doing things in a great way. What we're seeing now are cannabis businesses getting smart about how they hire people that can actually move the business forward instead of just hiring someone that they like or they see around a lot or, you know, something else. So it is not a hiring frenzy at all in the industry, but there is still plenty of hiring by companies that are funded and are looking to grow. And they're really focusing and getting better and better at hiring those who have participated in the industry that deserve to continue participating in the industry, which is not an affront to those that are not getting hired or have failed, because a lot of people have failed by no fault of their own, or, you know, maybe just don't belong in the cannabis industry, which doesn't mean that he or she is a bad person. It just means that maybe they should work in another industry that pays more and offers them more sanity, and they could revisit the cannabis industry later after we finish, shaking off the rust and the dust and getting to this place that we'll get to eventually one of these days.
Well, and Brian, I jumped ahead a little bit because we wanted to talk a little bit about sort of your background and how you got into this. But I just want to key in on something you mentioned because I think it's interesting, is the notion that people are hiring people from within the industry, people that have experience in the industry. And we've kind of seen trends where that was the norm. Then it was, no, we have to go out and get people with, for example, CPG experience or whatever the case might be, real marketing experience from outside of the industry. And then we've kind of come back to this notion, or so it seems. And there's really like three buckets, it seems like there. There's the OGs, people that know cannabis before there was a commercial regulated marketplace. And, you know, in this market, you know, that relevance is perhaps waning, although still relevant. Cultivation, right. But in terms of, you know, retail experience, yeah. Branding, marketing, things like that, maybe not so much. But then people from outside of cannabis, to your point, they want to get paid way too much than the cannabis industry can actually pay them. And companies take that bait and they really don't understand the industry or the products they're selling. I witnessed that, frankly, at the Benzinga conference that we were at a couple of weeks ago down in Miami. And so now you're saying there's kind of a trend to go back towards this notion of having industry experience, but that sounds like that's probably a mix of OGs or the original types of cannabis industry employees, insiders, executives, and people that have worked in the space, but were from outside of the space and have gained some experience. Maybe you could flesh that out a little bit, because I think that's an interesting trend.
Yeah, sure. So our agency fills roles all over the industry, from plant touching to finance and legal leaders and you name it. And we are placing OGs in really right about now, primarily those plant touching roles in cultivation, irrigation, fertigation, or those customer facing roles. I call them the OG 2.0s, those that entered, you know, 5 to 7, 8 years ago after building up their careers elsewhere in life sciences or gaming or CPG or otherwise. And, you know, and then they bring that blend of experience. So they would have worked somewhere else. They know what good looks like in a world-class environment or a Fortune 50, Fortune 100 company environment. They would have honed their leadership skills. They understand how to groom successors and, you know, reward and put KPIs in place and lead people to greatness with, you know, eyes on metrics and not just measuring success anecdotally, kind of, you know, the cannabis industry way, as I say, well, we're still in business and we're not in jail, so we're successful. And so when I say the hiring within the industry is focusing on those that are already in the industry, it's nearly every time for us the ask is, you know, get us one of those people that, you know, have already worked in CPG or elsewhere and rose to the ranks of head of XYZ department, but for the past, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 years they've been in the cannabis industry, because we don't have to educate them on what they're walking into. It won't be a complete shock to the system. They'll have all the unique industry experiences with whatever the tech or the tax code or the unique industry, you know, challenges we all face every day are. They've already figured out how to tackle that in some way, or they just understand that every day is going to be full of solving new problems or old problems in different creative ways. So, you know, every once in a while we do come across a company that just says, you know, we don't really like what's been done. We're just going to, you know, blanket say no one's done it right in the cannabis industry, and we're going to leverage all of your years of experience and network from recruiting, you know, outside of cannabis in your past life, Brian and team, to hire someone that, you know, can fit for this role, but hasn't participated in the industry because, you know, we think those people have developed a lot of bad habits and, you know, have lost their edge or whatever they want to say as a knock against people that have been in the industry, because it's, it's been a difficult road for all of us. And I wouldn't exactly agree with the statement that, you know, there's a lot of bad habits that have been developed by all of those in the industry, but I think it holds true for a lot of people who have fallen into that. Well, it's just the cannabis industry. Oh, well, win some, lose some. And they don't really hold themselves accountable or responsible for achieving greatness like they used to.
Yeah. And I think that's a problem that we see across the industry. Just as, you know, humans are creatures of habit and the industry is a challenging place, as we mentioned a few times. And so with things like 280E and, you know, the federal illegality piece, I think people just kind of get stuck in this, you know, I don't think complacency is the right word. It might be. But it's almost like, you know, this tolerance level of dealing with so many external pressures and risks that you just kind of let your business, you know, operate at its bare minimum operating speed. And like you said, you know, the metric seems to be, well, we haven't closed our doors yet, so, you know, all must be well. So yeah, I think it's interesting. And I think, you know, you mentioned earlier on the call that we'll see some extinction events coming up. And I think that's certainly the case, right? There's going to be a lot of consolidation happening, because of the way that some of these companies are failing to evolve and meet the new challenges and risks that are, you know, entering the scene. Now we've been talking about, you know, kind of about the cannabis OGs and skills that are relevant to, you know, cannabis businesses. I want to ask, you know, if we have any listeners out there that aren't in the cannabis industry, what are kind of some of your tips and advice as far as some of the transferable skills that we do see being relevant to finding a job in cannabis? You know, whether or not that's an entry-level bud tender position or, you know, a propagation assistant in a cultivation facility. Is there, you know, a common thread of skills that people are looking for? Is it adaptability first and foremost? What have you seen?
Yeah, and if you subscribe to the idea of, you know, the concept of hard skills and soft skills, I know it's been debated. We shouldn't call it that. We should just refer to them as essential skills. But I'll just use hard skills, soft skills. I think, you know, hard technical skills are all needed. It doesn't matter what the person's been up to in their career so far. There's a need for your hard technical skills somewhere in the industry. You just have to, you know, find that place. The longer, you know, more fun conversation is around the soft essential skills, what unique personality traits and characteristics make someone a good fit. And I always lead in with curiosity. We talk about the Thomas Edison soup test. Have you guys heard of that?
No.
So Thomas Edison hired a lot of apprentices, and he would always interview an apprentice over a bowl of soup and watch to see if the person seasoned the soup before tasting it. And if they did, then the interview was over because they were just too assumptive to work with him.
I love that.
So we talk about that a lot. So curiosity, we talk about, because the opposite of that is being assumptive. And it's been talked about ad nauseum, that, you know, people that come in assuming they know what's going to work in this industry because it's worked elsewhere are usually, you know, quickly fed a heavy dose of humble pie. And you just really have to understand you're coming into something new, and maybe the way you did things before will work, but you first have to observe and learn and, you know, sort of try to test that, and instead of just feeling like you're going to ride in on the white horse and immediately do or implement all the things you used to. That's a lot of times a recipe for failure. So, you know, tempered, I guess I'll use one of our industry buzzwords, metered, courage and confidence to come in and participate in the industry are really essential. Also, I would say a passion, like a true, a proper passion for the plant and the success of the industry. And I'm not saying that you have to be a consumer to work in the industry. It most certainly helps if you have a relationship with the plant. But at minimum, a passion for the success. I don't think it works to come in and just say, well, it's just a fantastic historical business opportunity to participate in a new industry. full stop. There, it has to be specific to the cannabis plant and industry succeeding. And for whatever that reason may be, because cannabis saved your kid or you or your grandma or something else, but just the passion for that is just important. It's too difficult. You know, we talk about the industry in terms of dog years. And I think it's rightly so, because the amount that we smush into every day and week and month and quarter is beyond what others are doing in other industries in general terms. And so it's exhausting, but it also can be equally as invigorating for people that have that passion for the success of the industry and everyone's equal access to consuming cannabis in whatever form they like, wherever they are.
Yeah, as you point out, there's an intensity to this industry. The dog years concept, I think, is a good way to describe it. But there's an intensity to this industry that is essential to get things done, because you're in constant hustle mode, even in the most well-structured or perhaps sophisticated organization. But what are some of the compensation trends that you see, if there is such a thing? Are we talking about, positions that are akin to other emerging industries in terms of compensation structure? Does it vary by state, vary by company, are folks looking for alternative or perhaps more creative ways to compensate employees, given the fact that those employees are going to come in and probably end up working 60 or 70 hours a week at a minimum just to make ends meet?
Yeah. If you average out workload and cash comp for most people in the industry, it works out to a very undesirable hourly rate for the most part. We're still behind generally other industries. We've definitely caught up in a lot of areas. I mean, when we fill general counsel and CFO and other very professionalized leadership roles for our clients, it in the recent years has caught up a lot to the mainstream. That was not the case for our first 4 years or so. It was really working people through pretty large cuts in cash compensation in exchange for equity. It is all over the place. I can't say that, MSOs have figured out how to agree on what fair market value is and offer equal comps. It is kind of all over the place. The construct of cash versus equity compensation is, sort of aligning organically as more inter-industry hiring is happening and businesses are understanding what the competition is paying and aligning better to that. But the real challenge is, like we talked about, everyone is counting their pennies and ideally just continuing to dole out equity to make up for lesser cash comps. But, those people that have been participating for years in the industry have been trading cash compensation for equity, and they're kind of fed up with it. Their families have suffered, and they've not had their wealth creation events they were promised for those cuts in pay. So now, how do you hire that person who's spent all these years earning less than they could have otherwise and are trying to get whole? Because when you work in this industry, your whole family does, so they're feeling all the pain of all the grinding it out, and that person's bringing home less pay than they could otherwise. But it becomes like this addictive thing. You can't turn back. So it helps companies hire in the industry, because it's like you can't get out of it once you're in. It's just, it's really addictive. Like, you just need the pace of it, and you can't imagine leaving it. But at the same time, it is difficult for people to find that fair market value cash compensation. And there's not the excitement around the equity plays for a lot of those people. So, I think we might see, I don't think it'll happen anytime soon where we see companies trend back towards hiring cold from outside the industry because they can lure people in with more equity than otherwise. I don't know if we see that, because there's just so many good people from within the industry that are unemployed right now. So for better or worse, companies can continue to hire at lesser comps because these people just want to get back to work. But we also see, because those same people are frustrated with being overworked and underpaid and don't care about the equity play anymore, we see a lot of these people, of course, setting up their own shops and going off as solopreneurs or setting up these small shops where it's soup to nuts. You can call us up for whatever your finance, legal, you know, operational or other, or commercial needs may be, and just pay for performance. And I haven't seen a big movement yet towards that as a whole. We've seen some of that in commercial hiring and like tractional sales leader hiring. But I definitely expect that to start trending where cannabis businesses will look to hire those people and just to pay for services rather than, you know, carrying the whole cost of that person moving forward. And a lot of great talent in the industry will prefer to work that way. So that should become a thing. I'd be shocked if not.
Yeah. And I think we have a lot to thank. Yeah. I mean, well, we don't have a lot to thank COVID for, but I think COVID really kind of accelerated that, you know, kind of gigification, if you will, right, of services where, you know, it's more of a fractional model, and one person is able to serve, you know, multiple companies and earn individually more than they would working with one company. But then, of course, the burden on the companies is much less than hiring a full-time employee to do that function.
So. Right, but then you have a company, and we know there's a lot of insecurity and other things at play in the industry. So how does that company trust that their head of, you know, HR or finance or legal, that's a fractional executive, will keep everything confidential and will give them the time that they need, even though they don't, you know, using air quotes, your own, you know, that person, because they're not a full-time employee. So I think right now that's part of the holdup is just, well, there's a lot of talent out there, so let's just hire people so we just know that they'll be fully accessible and we can have them under NDA and all of, you know, these other things that just help us sleep better at night.
Yeah. And, you know, I think you said people are addicted to the industry, and that resonates with me because I think there's this kind of sense of, yeah, you know, you're building the future, right? There's a sense of kind of participating and building an industry. And it's like, well, you know, take a hit now, hopefully have something come down the road once the industry has matured a little bit. So I think there's still a future there. We just got to shake out, like you said, the rust and the cobwebs.
Well, just real quick on that point, a large company was looking to hire a government affairs person, right? And so I reached out to the folks at that company and I said, well, look, you can outsource that to us for a fraction of what you pay a full-time person. And I think that based on our network and what we're doing on a weekly basis, we could get that information to you in under 5 hours per week. To be honest with you, it, based on the scope of it, it doesn't make sense in that context to hire a full-time person. And they said, no, we want a full-time person to do it. And in part because they wanted to task that person with other things outside of government affairs type relationships. So it's always combining roles, and unfortunately, you know, the fractional nature sometimes is maligned or looked down upon, whereas other times it's very effective.
Yeah, I think people wear a lot of hats in company roles anyways, right? So to your point, they're performing multiple functions.
It's a great point. Yeah, I think every doorway to every cannabis business should probably be probably receive a very dramatic height increase so people can walk through with all the dozens of hats they're wearing.
The hat stack, yes. So I want to pivot actually a little bit to a little bit more of a, you know, a personal topic, if you will. Hunter Esquire. There's two words there. There's the hunter and the Esquire. As we know, you are the head hunter. So who is the Esquire in Hunter Esquire?
That would be Jessica Passman, my wife, who I love giving credit for just inspiring me with the courage to start this thing 6 years ago and for being the quiet magic that drives the business. So we, long story short, when we launched this thing together 6 years ago, we actually, were named The Gig. GIGG was in all caps. It was an acronym for The Grass is Greener Global. And we thought it was, right? It was fun. It was cute. Most people liked it. Turned out to be a little bit too kitschy for some of our clients who were going public and looking to, you know, sort of tout their talent acquisition partnership and talking about how, you know, The Gig is running our CFO search wasn't quite right for them. So, you know, at first we said, well, who cares? You know, there's Yahoo and Google and these other funny name companies. We'll work through it and it'll be fine. But we did really feel like we were missing out on growth opportunities for the business because of that. And we did have some investors let us know, you know, actually I know you guys do good work and I brought you up in the boardroom for such and such search. And the response is basically, what the F is the gig? So we did have to face a hard truth and go through a rebrand. And so we said, all right, let's just go the other way and really fancy this thing up and sound like this elevated agency that really aligned with, you know, one of our missions anyhow, when we decided to launch this, was we wanted to help the industry really professionalize, because we thought helping in that way would help everything legalize if we could just be a part of the professionalizing effort. So we said, okay, let's just sound really ultra professional. And I'm not sure exactly how it came about, but, you know, all I know how to do is headhunt, and my wife being a lawyer, it felt great. We just really had to figure out, were we Hunter and with an ampersand or and with the plus, which of course we went with the plus sign, just to mix it up a little bit. And it was received well, thankfully, and it's working out so far.
No, I love that. And I think it's an interesting message as far as branding goes overall, right? We've seen that time and time again in the industry where we moved away from, you know, the stoner focused brands and into, you know, more sophisticated, maybe, you know, soccer mom brands, right? And stuff that's a little bit more accessible to industry segments that don't use cannabis yet.
Yeah. And you, I think we all here can agree that your cannabis business, plant touching or service providing or otherwise, does not have to have canna or 420 in the name. It definitely does not. We could be more creative than that.
The abbreviated letters don't have to be THC.
Yeah.
Or
thank
CBD.
You.
Right, right. We've seen a lot of that. Well, you know, Brian, it's been a true pleasure chatting with you. Before we wind down, want to give you an opportunity to, you know, shout out any projects you're working on, let people know where to find you, or if there's possible clients out there looking for a stellar new employee, how they can hire your services.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah, so we are, for anyone listening in the cannabis industry who doesn't already know how to reach us, you can reach out to hello@hunteresquire.com or me directly, Brian with a Y at hunteresquire.com, or just reach out through LinkedIn. I spend a lot of my time every day there as well. And if anyone also, and this is a whole other conversation, anyone listening who's participating in building a business in the psychedelic space. I did recruit 15 years in life sciences, and we did expand our service offering a little bit over 2 years ago to that field as well. And I'm happy to let people who are new to building businesses in that space pick my brain on any workforce planning, because we do like to participate early with potential clients and how they're building their business, if they'll let us in those conversations as a way to build trust and understand everyone better, so that when we do get to hunting for talent, there's a lot of trust in the relationship and we understand how each other works. So, yeah, circling back to the question, it's just hello at Hunter Esquire, Brian or at Hunter Esquire, or through LinkedIn. I'll always respond right away electronically, and I look forward to making new friends because of this recording. I'm sure it'll be huge for our business. Thank you very much for having me. It's always a pleasure talking to you guys.
No, yeah, it's been a great pleasure chatting today. And it sounds like we have a second episode in the works focusing on the psychedelic space. So we'll get that going.
And we'll do it in person next time as
yes,
well.
Yes, we will.
I love it. Count me in, please.
All righty, Brian. Well, thanks so much for being on and hope you have a great evening.
Thank you. Same to you. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us for another enlightening conversation. If you liked what you heard, hit that subscribe button to get all future episodes fresh out of the studio. Suggestions for topics or guests for the show, please send them to hello@bobhoban.com. And as always, thanks to Benzinga for powering the Hoban Minute.